sports. From the WGIL newsroom, I'm Will Stevenson.
Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Will Stevenson.
Good morning. It's 8:12 at 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL. Galesburg Live continues on this Saturday, June 1st. I am glad you're with us this morning. I'm Will Stevenson. Yes, I was here last week. Normally, a number of us take various turns hosting the show, but it just worked out that I am here 2 weekends in a row, and that is all right. And as I said last hour, we get the chance to talk more in depth about things we normally talk about on Galesburg's Evening News, among other places, weeknights starting at 5. And I think this conversation this hour certainly fits the need to have a lot more time devoted to it. My guest this hour, I'm pleased to welcome a political science professor at Monmouth College, a name I know you've heard from time to time. Robin Johnson is here this morning. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Robin and I are almost co-workers in the fact that Robin hosts a weekly show, Talking Politics, on our sister station over in Burlington, KBUR. That airs on Sundays, right?
Airs Fridays and then repeats on Tuesdays.
Ah, I was completely wrong about that.
You were close.
As long as it's not on when I'm on here. No, I'm kidding. you can catch up on that over at KBUR.com, I know. So I know you follow a lot of the politics of the area, but you also, with some of your students, did a project regarding to the closure of the Galesburg Maytag plant, which I will spend most of this hour talking about. But I just can't help myself, Robin. The legislature in Illinois is, it felt to me when I woke up this morning and learned that a budget was passed almost in the middle of the night, I felt like the state government was almost up to its old tricks again.
Well, partly, but then again, we were there the other day. Dr. Wyatt and Dwayne Bonifer from the college and I went down Wednesday to visit with legislators, and several of them were talking about kind of a good feeling of cooperation again, where at least the two sides are talking. And while the Democrats have a supermajority and able to do what they want, there did seem, even from the Republicans, being a little bit of a breath of fresh air that they were cooperating at least a little more than they used to.
Some of our local lawmakers, Representative Swanson and Hammond, for instance, both were concerned that maybe that cooperation maybe wasn't as there as it was during the Rauner administration. Do you have a perspective on that?
Again, that was, we're going by what we heard there Wednesday, and I think it depends on the issue. Of course, dropping 1,000-page bill on people's desks and giving them very little time to really look through it is old practice down in Springfield. It's not the best, but that's the way the sausage is made, so to speak.
I was thinking about it, and I spent a couple of years in Springfield. I only covered the state capitol when our capitol reporter absolutely needed me to. It usually just gave me a headache any time I would go there. But I was thinking about it yesterday in terms of the recreational marijuana bill that was passed. It was the regulations were more or less hidden in a separate bill that had to do with, I think, pawn shops and theft of property, mostly so it could avoid the normal channels of three readings of a bill in government. That really kind of irks me.
I having worked down there, there's different ways of getting things done, and it's so hard to pass legislation because the forces of resistance have so many more avenues to stop bills from being enacted than something getting enacted. So it really puts a prize on being able to come up with ways of working through and around things to actually – and bringing everybody to the table to get things done. I know there were a lot of stakeholders involved in that bill and in other bills, and to try to get everybody on board on the same side to get something through to meet everybody's objections is a challenge.
What's your perspective on what's been happening in national politics lately? I know through your show on KBUR that you were able to – I think by virtue of it being based in Iowa, technically, that you were able to talk to a lot of the presidential candidates here during the last election cycles.
Yeah, it's not because of my brilliance or good looks. It's because
it's never worked for me either. I get that.
Because the station is Iowa, I think it makes a difference, obviously. And it was fun. 3 years ago, I got to interview 15 of the 17 Republican candidates. And this year I've interviewed 5 of the Democrats. I've got Congressman Tim Ryan lined up this week. I've got contacts with about 6 or 7 more. So there's 23, I would say there's 20 major Democratic candidates. My goal is to talk to all of them. I try to ask similar questions based on more the economy of this region, which I still feel is issue number one. And I don't really go into what they said 20 years ago, gotcha questions. I leave that to MSNBC and Fox. I'm focused more on issues that matter in people's lives around here, and especially in my role as a college professor and looking at the effects of globalization on the Midwest. That's a key theme that I have in my interviews.
Gosh, 23 candidates for president. That seems like an awfully large number.
It is.
This early in the game, is it?
Yeah, it is. But there'll be a winnowing process here from a fundraising perspective, and just people not able to get the type of support that they need. But it'll be very interesting. People usually complain because they don't have choices.
Yeah.
The last two cycles, we've had plenty of choices.
But as much as people complain about the choices, though, they're also still in large numbers not going out to vote as much as they might want you to think that they are.
Yeah.
Turnout numbers have just been, with the exception of the midterms, turnout has just been abysmal.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a whole other topic. But I think what's been happening is we are getting more candidates with different types of viewpoints. Who would have thought that a candidate like Bernie Sanders espousing democratic socialism would get the support he would have gotten? Donald Trump getting the support he got. So I think there's some good in it, in the sense that it is getting people a little more energized. There's certainly some negative aspects to the hyper-partisanship and the polarization we have in this country, which it's an interesting question of whether that the people, whether we ourselves are so polarized and the candidates are just taking advantage of that, or whether we're following them.
Is Iowa as an important a state politically? Is it still that way as it has been in past years and past election cycles?
Well, I think it'll be important just because the timing of the caucuses, obviously being the first contest in the nation, as far as whether it's Democratic or Republican, it's been trending more Republican. This last election, though, there were signs that the Democrats may be coming back, and that they elected two congresswomen from the northeast part of the state, which is an area like our area, more full factory towns, agriculture. And then the third congressional district, which is the Des Moines area and some rural areas.
Yeah.
But the governor was reelected. The Democrats thought they were going to take that back. Governor Reynolds was reelected. I think it leans Republican, but I think the Democrats are going to try to compete it, because those electoral college votes are going to be critical, and there's just not that many battleground states left.
And if there's one thing we learned from the last presidential election, the electoral college still matters.
Oh, yes. Well, it's all there is. It's the whole ballgame.
Exactly.
In a lot of ways, the key question for the Democratic candidates is, how are you going to win Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan?
All right. You mentioned that you talk on your show a lot about the economy, as that's one of the most important issues here. We'll talk about that in terms of Galesburg and the Maytag plant when we come back, as we get into the meat of why you're here today. We're talking with Monmouth College political science professor Robin Johnson when we come back. Voices of Maytag. That's what we'll focus on next as Galesburg Live continues on WGIL. It's 8:20. Good morning. It's 8:22 at WGIL. This is Galesburg Live. I appreciate you joining us today. We are talking with Monmouth College political science professor Robin Johnson. And despite my barrage of questions about politics there, although Robin does deal with that quite a bit through Monmouth College and his classes and through his show on our sister station, KBUR in Burlington, called Talking Politics, he's here today because you and some of your students, Robin, completed a pretty important project related to the anniversary of the 15th anniversary of that, of the Galesburg Maytag plant closure. I like to tell people that I started 10 days, 17 years ago, before the announcement that the plant would close in 2 years. And I remember that day very well. I jokingly say that was because, one, I was assigned to the only thing going on in Galesburg that had nothing to do with the announcement of the plant closure, but because that day, I think, and then fast forward to the day of the plant closure, was so devastating for so many people.
Yeah, I still remember it. I was living in the region at the time over in Monmouth, and I still remember that day and the fear. it provoked in people throughout the entire area, and just not knowing what was coming next. And for anybody, as I mentioned to my students, and when we study this, it used to be, and a lot of listeners, the older listeners, will remember when you could get a job and stay in it for 30 years and retire. Now, we've all gone through several times when we've lost our jobs. I've lost my job twice. How do you react to that? And part of the goal I had to have students, in having students examine this, is empathy. Put yourself in their shoes. I told my students, you're probably going to lose your jobs too. How are you going to deal with it? Okay, you go get your fifth of Jack Daniels and drown your sorrows one night. But then the next day, you got to get back up and fight. And that's one of the things that my students were impressed with, was the resilience and grit of the people they talked to.
The day of the closure announcement, we sent our news director at the time, Shannon Christosek, may she rest in peace. She was a huge mentor to me. She went right to Shady Hill, the bar near the Maytag plant, because that's where everybody was going when they learned the devastating news. But I want to fast forward to the report that you did and marking of the 15th anniversary, because you said some things there that I want to expound upon further. But first, talk about first the class that did this and what led you to study this particular plant closure.
Sure. Let me give a little bit of background on the class first. The class is called Politics and Government in the Midwest. We feel this is a unique class. When this was first put together, we weren't aware of anybody else doing this, taking a look at regional Midwest politics and government. And it's a citizenship course as part of the college's integrated studies initiative. So this is all seniors that take this class. The way I shaped this class was to focus on the impact of globalization on the Midwest region. I feel this is the preeminent issue facing our region, and for not only agriculture, manufacturing, trade, immigration, and all these issues are still with us. And in a lot of ways, you can the way I've structured the class is starting with a broad look at globalization with Richard Longworth's book, Caught in the Middle, which takes a look at these themes in a broad sense. And then we narrow it down to look at a case study of how globalization has specifically impacted a city, which is Galesburg. And we use Chad Broughton's book called Boom, Bust, Exodus. Chad was a former Knox College professor. Mm-hmm. It's an outstanding book, and a lot of the individuals of that book are still around, and we talk to a lot of them. So students read that book, and then the next part of the class actually is looking at the election of Donald Trump in 2016 and drawing a line between the issues of globalization's impact on the Midwest and how that impacted our country's decision to elect Donald Trump. And, of course, Knox and Warren counties are two examples of counties that voted for Obama twice and Donald Trump, which is another project we did after this one, which my students complained about the workload. But I did have them look at that because it's important. As I tell my students, I don't care if they like Trump or don't like Trump, but it's important to understand why he won. It's such a watershed election in our country's history.
I'm glad you said that the way you did, because I hear, you know, almost every day, and perhaps even some programming that our two radio stations air, for example, that seem to give institutions of higher learning, shall I say, a slant toward everybody being liberal. And we know that's not the case. That just can't possibly be the case.
Not in my class. I welcome all viewpoints as long as they're backed up. I had some very interesting debates between students, all conducted in a civil manner. But I welcome diverse viewpoints, again, if they just back up their arguments.
That's wonderful. In terms of globalization, as you said, this plant closure seems to me to have almost everything that you could think of when it comes to globalization, from the fact that Maytag took incentives that were designed to keep the plant in Galesburg, to the fact that they closed the plant anyway and opened one up in Mexico in its place, to the fact that the plant in Mexico eventually closed itself anyway as its owner Whirlpool consolidated operations.
Yeah, this has a lot of elements that are common in other areas. You know, I just did a radio interview for my show this week with a guy who wrote a book about his hometown, Lancaster, Ohio. Mm-hmm. Same thing. Anchor Hocking, a glass company, they gave incentives to try to keep the company there. In that case, it wasn't globalization as much. It was just private equity firms came in whose goal is to make a quick profit and turn it around short-term shareholder
value.
Make money
at all costs, yeah.
Which we had that business philosophy, which is another – it was a question on my final exam, take-home all essay exam, trace the different business philosophies of the different owners of Maytag. And it went from a very benevolent style under the Maytags where they took care of their people. Fred Maytag would come in the lunch counter and say, how's everybody doing? Very open. And then it went to more of a focus on short-term shareholder value in the 1990s, which happened a lot. And the focus was on
the
bottom line.
A lot of manufacturers ended up doing things.
Yeah. So the focus went away from perhaps a multitude of stakeholders, the community, the employees, the customers, to just the shareholders. And I hear this, I see this over and over again, and it's still playing out, where perhaps our country, you know, the business leadership has lost something, and it's had a lot of impacts. And I think what the students saw that was really interesting to me, that was echoed over and over again by the people, the losing the job and the pay and the benefits hurt, but it was also the loss of community. The fact that this was a family, a second family, where, you know, you could just picture thousands of employees gathering every day in this facility to work. And, yeah, they're doing their job and doing a good job. Maytag, by the way, was profitable when it closed down.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also living every day with these people and picnics. And that's the thing that I think really stuck with my students in our discussions afterwards, is how powerful that was, that we've lost something here beyond wages and benefits. A loss of community where people just don't get together as much in groups as they used to.
I want to talk more about that and talk more about the profiles that your students did, but I need to take another break here. We're talking with Monmouth College political science professor Robin Johnson about a study that him and his students did called The Voices of Maytag, and we'll talk about those profiles of some of those Maytag workers who ended up without jobs and how there's a wide range, it seems, from optimism to pessimism contained in there. And we'll do that when we come back. First, it's 8:30. Cameron has a check of WGIL news headlines, and then Galesburg Live continues on WGIL. Good morning. It's 8:30.
Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Will Stevenson.
It is 8:34 at WGIL. I'm glad you're with us for Galesburg Live this morning. I'm Will Stevenson, normally on Galesburg's Evening News weeknights from 5 to 6 p.m., and I appreciate you listening to that as much as I appreciate you listening this morning as well. This hour, we're talking with a political science professor at Monmouth College, who I know you've heard from time to time on WGIL before, as well as on our sister station in Burlington, KBUR, Robin Johnson. Students in one of his classes, among other things, as part of an almost final project, looked at the impact of the closure of the Galesburg Maytag plant 15 years after its closure. This year would be 15 years, and I think we're pretty much almost coming right square on that anniversary, if I remember correctly. Robin, this report largely focuses on the profiles of 40-some different former Maytag workers, correct?
Yeah, we reached out to 42 of former Maytag employees. I had 19 students in the class, and I began by planning on having each student interview one former Maytag employee. We got a lot of interest through Auto Help over here, Tom Lowy with the Register Mail, Jeremy Carlin, a local attorney, people that I know helped. Mike Patrick, it started with a conversation I had with Mike Patrick back in January of last year. So we reached out to these folks and arranged face-to-face interviews. We had 42 people total. I did two interviews myself just to see what it was like.
Mm-hmm.
And we had 25 men and 17 women. And of the 42 interviews, 37 were done face-to-face. Five had to be done over the phone just because of scheduling conflicts, which was okay because some of the employees lived a ways away, the former employees. So we arranged these so they were face-to-face, which was really a good move because both the former employees enjoyed getting to meet the students and the students loved getting to meet the former employees. It was a mutual thing.
I got the impression from looking through some of the profiles that the students themselves, as you said, really, really kind of enjoyed this process from what otherwise was ultimately a sad kind of a situation.
Yeah. It's the personal element, I think, and again, the empathy they felt of people going through something that they may have to face themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And just sitting down and meeting with people, and I heard over and over in our discussions as we went through these interviews, we would have class time to discuss what was going on. And the students were really, fired up. They really enjoyed meeting these people and bragged how, hey, my person bought my breakfast and stuff. And the interviews I kept hearing went longer than they thought. And I will add, Will, that the students came up with most of these questions. After reading the books, I let them drive this as much as possible. They developed most of the questions. I did have help from a New York Times reporter, Campbell Robertson, who wrote a story about Galesburg last summer. And the whole concept of this project came out of a discussion we had on how these people are doing 15 years later. And so Campbell was involved as well, and the students got to talk to him on Skype at the end of the semester. So that was a treat as well.
What sorts of things did the students ask about in general with each of these workers?
We divided it up in sections. One was what their initial reaction was. Another was what they did. Mm-hmm. Some of them were in a position to retire. Some took advantage of job training programs. Some didn't. Then we had a section on the impact of the community, their views on what happened in the community. And then we get into the impact on the country. We got into politics a little bit, their views towards Obama, who came into Galesburg quite a bit and referenced Galesburg in Maytag.
We covered here a major rally that happened that then Senator Obama was a big part of that. Did he sort of rally the troops, if you will?
Did he really live up to what he was talking about? And then we get into Donald Trump and asked questions about Trump. And finally, we thought it would be interesting to ask their view of the American dream. The American dream has typically been, you know, the middle class existence, doing better than your parents' generation, you know, a nice house, garage, dog in a yard. And that was really interesting to see these folks, whether they still view the American dream as being the same or perhaps downsized or even dead.
I imagine you had answers just in that regard alone, running the gamut, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. And this report runs 84 pages. If people are interested, don't be intimidated by that, because it's 42 stories of individuals. Yeah. So I would welcome people in the community to look at it, and again, don't be intimidated by the length of it.
And we are going to include a link to that report. There's a PDF of it available. We'll link to that when we post this interview online a little later this morning at WGIL.com. You'll just be able to scroll down to the on-air conversation section, and there will be a link to this interview and to the report itself. I mentioned off the air during the break, Robin, that the reactions from the workers themselves ranged from very optimistic to just the realization that you kind of had to pick up your bootstraps and just move on and make the best out of a bad situation, to some employees that still hold, and perhaps rightfully so, a lot of anger about the plant closure. And I was especially struck by all of that because I remember at the time, almost to a man, people we would talk to here in Galesburg would say that once the Maytag plant closed, that this city was going to turn into a ghost town. I didn't necessarily believe that was the case, but it's kind of gone over time from at least overall pessimism to a little bit of optimism sprinkled in.
Well, there again, you've got a choice when you have bad things happen in your lives. You know, you can sit around and feel bad about it, or you get back up. And again, the students admired the determination of a lot of these folks. They did get back up, but they held that anger. And for some of the people we talked to, it was striking how it still brings up really strong emotions. I called one gentleman to ask if he would be – I came across his name, and I would call first to make sure these folks would be willing to participate and describe it to him. And this gentleman got really emotional. And did not want to participate. It brought up too many bad memories, and I felt really bad afterwards of even bringing it up. So it did run the gamut, but there's still, by quite a few people, as you'll see when you read, there's still a degree of anger among people, but it's tempered by the fact that, well, we just move on.
Let's give some highlights here of some of the profiles of people. And the first person I saw When I clicked on the report, there's a collage of pictures of employees. One of them perhaps one of the perfect example of being able to just pick up and move on and kind of being optimistic about the future was Pam Davidson, who many folks know here as the chair of the Knox County Board, among other things.
Yeah, hers was an interesting story of just, it's just a mindset, a focus of, I'm not going to let this defeat me, I'm going to move on, and we found that with Pam and several other folks as well.
Give me some ideas of what some of the employees said to you, like maybe either person by person or however you think is a good way to kind of describe parts of the report here.
That's interesting. It's hard to narrow down to some degree. I mean, we did try to get a mix of people. We got most of the people worked on the factory floor were union members, but we did get some office employees and management employees as well. Their take was a little different. Several of them felt like the state's business environment hurt, and that if there were changes in the state's business environment, perhaps Maytag could have survived. Others, more of the union members, felt like the employees themselves had worked with management to help, make changes to help the company be more competitive. One thing that was striking to me, I remember, was one of the management folks helped me find the former union president, and they hadn't seen each other in a long time. Now, you would think a management and union, the fact that the management person was helping me find this union president was interesting in itself, but when they saw each other, they hugged and had an interesting conversation. How you doing? And that's just not the way you think normally about management and union, but at Maytag, it seemed like that there was a pretty good relationship of the local management folks and the union folks, which, again, it's part of the community aspect that I think was a great loss to our whole area.
I was going to say, I think that there was probably a big difference between local management and, how shall I say, the suits, the corporate people.
Right.
I imagine that's probably where a lot of the resentment was and still lies, was with the corporate, not the people who ran the day-to-day of the plant.
Absolutely. You know, the other thing that was interesting, and I want to be careful here bringing politics into it.
Sure.
But my feeling was always that Obama, who came here again, and I was at the rally you referenced that was in the book as well, kept referencing Galesburg and talking about he's going to keep these people in mind. There's a quote in the book that I asked students, did he really do this? That every day did he get up and keep these folks in mind? I have my doubts. But when you talk to these folks, they saw this through a prism of, I think, their political inclinations. If they were Democrats, they're like, oh, no, Obama did everything he could, in spite of the fact that he kept pursuing trade agreements. And the one thing that these folks unanimously felt was that NAFTA really hurt, and it was negotiated by Bill Clinton, a Democratic president. So even the folks we talked to kind of see things through the prism of politics, where most of the Democratic employees felt, no, Obama really, he did all he could, and they didn't like Trump, even though Trump is trying to address unfair trade agreements. I thought that was kind of an interesting aspect of this as well.
How do the employees largely think? I wonder that, again, just because, as you said, a Democratic president's supported NAFTA. President Obama, I think, even went so far as to maybe agree with the workers that NAFTA wasn't such a good thing. But then again, at the end of the day, as you said, nothing about it ever changed until, as the president has, President Trump now has openly said, he wants to look at all these trade agreements.
Right. And the Democrat, what Bill Clinton kept saying was that these job training programs were going to help, and we're going to retrain you to go do things, other things, and make the same money and benefits, and that just there are some success stories with it, but it didn't happen to the degree that I thought that they think they thought it would. And it's just ironic that Donald Trump now is adopting the hardline views on trade that a lot of these folks, I think, would support, and that the politics have turned a little bit, but yet I think we're so hyper-polarized that people are still staying in their partisan lanes for the most part.
I want to ask you about, there are some examples in the study of those who took advantage of the opportunities that were given to them, but I do need to take one more break first. Robin Johnson is a political science professor at Monmouth College. He and his students authored a report marking the 15th anniversary of the Maytag plant closure in Galesburg. We'll get into some more of that when we come back. It is 8:46 as Galesburg Live continues on WGIL. Good morning. 10 before 9 at WGIL. This is Galesburg Live. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Will Stevenson. As we mentioned, both of our conversations this morning will be online at WGIL.com in the on-air conversation section. We'll post that as soon as we get done this morning. And that's where you can also find a link to this Voices of Maytag report authored by Robin Johnson and some of his political science students at Monmouth College. You talked to 40 different employees, Robin, of Maytag that were there when the plant closed 15 years ago this year. But this wasn't sort of you want to emphasize, this wasn't sort of a thing where you were taking a poll, if you will. You were really just kind of looking at sort of the human stories involved here.
Right. We started out just by, I reached out to Mike Patrick, who was a former union president, who I know, and we had breakfast on a cold, cold day in January of 18, I think it was. I asked him if he thought this was possible. And a group of former Maytag people meet monthly still
at
Trace Restaurant.
Wow.
And so I went and I sat down. He invited me and I sat down with him and said, "Would you guys be interested in this?" And I got about 12 people, and that's where it started. But this wasn't scientific at all. We just started reaching out and through networking and got more people involved. Some people I know, Doug Dennison from Monmouth, who was featured in the book, he helped out. And then from there, we just kept branching out and getting help among people who would be interested in participating.
There are, among those stories, as we kind of alluded to earlier, there are a number of people that – as we mentioned, made the best of a bad situation. They really took advantage of the job training and job placement and educational opportunities that were offered to them, and more or less had to be formed in the time since the closure happened.
Yeah, the job training programs were there to try to retrain people into newer, growing occupations that fit this area. A lot of them were in healthcare. There were some examples of this paying off, but there was also some harsh criticism of these programs, of just kind of putting everybody into healthcare, for example. And so the book had some statistics on how many people took advantage of the programs and how many went in to areas in which they first intended. For the most part, though, it didn't seem like the pay and the benefits were the same as what they had at Maytag. We did have
a lot of the employees looking for at least a similar level of pay, regardless of the industry they wanted to move into.
I think that was the hope, but the big issue, not only here but nationally, is what do you do with somebody who's lost their job, who's 50 years old and doesn't have perhaps a college degree? What can they be retrained to do? And that's a tough one. What do we do? What should the policy approach be there? There's been talk by different candidates of wage insurance, wage subsidies, by both parties. Marco Rubio, I interviewed and had a proposal for wage insurance when he was running for president. I think it's a great idea, and would give some people at least a cushion to not suffer economically from trade practices.
That's something I think the city of Galesburg, too, has frankly struggled quite a bit with in the last 15 years, is creating opportunities for job retraining. And I think that's something that through the Galesburg School District, through Carl Sandburg College especially, are finally trying to address in a real way, along with the issue of maybe job training versus just getting students ready for college, too.
Yeah, we learned that, too, because in some of my previous classes, well before this last semester, we've worked closely with the city of Galesburg and their economic development group, Mayor Pritchard and Ken Springer. And they've given us projects to help them as they trying to put together a strategic plan. Advanced manufacturing, we toured the Pegasus facility and heard from Andrew Heath. Healthcare and logistics. And that was fun. And Ken Springer emphasized that, you know, these projects that the students are doing, these civic engagement projects, it's not going to be a report that sits on a table, sits on a file and collects dust. They actually use them. In fact, my classes helped them research what type of economic development effort, the structure of it as far as public or private or public-private, is most used in cities across the country. And they use that to develop the partnership that they have now. So that's been a great learning experience, and I've had students actually present before their board, which is And they love it because Springer emphasizes he doesn't want 50-page reports, which my students love. It's like a 5 to 10-page report, and they really love that.
And nobody likes 50-page reports except college students.
That's right.
I was interested to hear you say earlier that that some of the Maytag employees were concerned that they were maybe being shuttled into areas of the medical field. While both hospitals are two of the largest employers here in Galesburg, the railroad has, I think, almost been, in some respects, the biggest success story since the Maytag plant closed. They've hired a lot. They're actually Knox County's largest employer outside of the two hospitals, among other things. And I imagine, too, that while many people got into medical, they were maybe attracted to some of the benefits that the railroad provides, that Burlington Northern Santa Fe provides.
The railroad was a lifeline for quite a few people in this study. I don't know the specific number, but if you read through these, you'll see at least a half a dozen, I think, people that went to work for the railroad. Some started working there as they were still at Maytag and working incredibly long hours, but transitioning over before they even left Maytag to work for the railroad. So you're right. That was a lifeline for some of these folks.
And I noted in scrolling through some of the profiles of some of the former workers, I couldn't help but notice that one of them, his picture was taken standing in front of the last Maytag refrigerator that came off the line that's now on display and has been for a long time at Lindstrom's here in downtown Galesburg.
That was Mike Patrick, who I think had the longest tenure of anybody interviewed, over 40 years.
How did he react to all this?
Shock, like everybody else. Mm-hmm. I think most people maybe had a sense, that feared that it was coming because of some of the issues leading up to it. Maytag had started outsourcing, and a lot of these folks talked about how the quality immediately declined when some of the parts and all were outsourced from Mexico, coming up back up here to be assembled.
Mm-hmm.
But Mike was like many others that kind of saw the handwriting on the wall a little bit. But still, that doesn't lessen the shock when it actually happens.
I have about 2 minutes left before I need to wrap up, but one thing I wanted to two things I want to ask you first. Did any of employees, was there any talk about what's become of the site of the plant? I know Blick Art Materials is using some of it, but by and large, that plant area on Linwood Road remains empty and perhaps deteriorating at this point.
I believe there were a few that talked about that. It was interesting. We had one gentleman who I interviewed, who still refuses to drive by the plant because of still lingering hostility.
I'm sure he's not the only one, too.
But there was a little talk about the fact that I think a turbine or windmill company has something to do with the facility out there, I believe. But there wasn't much. It was a lot of that was torn down, of course, and what's left, you know, is there. But I don't recall there being a lot of reference to that.
All right. We're almost out of time, but you're considering following up this report, maybe doing this more frequently than just marking the 15th anniversary.
Well, what we're thinking about, since I'll be teaching this class again this fall, I have 21 students signed up. I'm thinking about doing the same thing, and I had breakfast with a couple former employees who are in the existing study, asking if they think we can round up another 25 or so people. So I would just invite any listeners who worked at Maytag to take a look at what we've done and see if they'd like to participate, because if we can get another 25 where each student can do an interview, or even if we got up to around 40 or so where each student could do two, We would entertain doing this again to mark the 15-year anniversary this fall, and maybe add to the total we have and get some other stories from folks.
Is there a way folks can contact you, perhaps?
Yes. My phone number at the college is 309-457-2407. Just leave a number or a message, and I will respond. And again, 457-2407.
Robin Johnson, a political science professor at Monmouth College and a host of Talking Politics that airs on our sister station KBUR in Burlington. Thanks so much for coming in. This is very fascinating, very thorough job that you and your students have done with this report.
Thanks. And by the way, just it's Heartland Politics. We changed the name about 3 years ago.
Oh, well.
To reflect the broader region, so it's Heartland Politics.
We just got the memo on that here across the river in Galesburg. Thanks so much again.
Thank you, Will.
And thanks for listening to Galesburg Live this week. And again, you'll be able to read the report and listen to these conversations shortly at WGIL.com. Have a terrific rest of your weekend. I'll be back Monday night at 5 with Galesburg's Evening News. Today's homeowner is next, following a check of local news and weather here on WGIL. Thanks for listening. I'm Will Stevenson. Have a great weekend.